Hey, everybody, this is Connor, your podcast producer. Welcome back to the Yellowbird Connect podcast. It's 2020, it's a new year, and we've got a new slate of podcast content ready for you. This week, it is our pleasure to welcome Al Nicoletti to the studio. He is an attorney based out of Jacksonville Beach that specializes in property law. He and Pat get into a lot of the nitty-gritty legal topics that are of concern to real estate professionals. You guys are going to learn a lot from this conversation. Hope you guys enjoy it. Make sure that if you enjoy the content that you subscribe and leave a review and follow us on Instagram at Yellowbird Connect. Hope you guys enjoy the podcast. Have yourselves a great week.
The main reason we started Connect is to give everyone the opportunity to do what I did.
We wanted to be able to offer the real estate community, especially locally, something new, something that was fresh.
And if we can help a couple people change their lives through this education.
Just one person or two people coming up to me saying, man, that was awesome. Like what you put on was great.
Then it'd be a huge win for everyone.
If you've gotten any value at all from this Yellowbird podcast, make sure to like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes. What's up, everybody? This is Pat Flynn here on the Yellowbird Connect podcast. Today we have with us Al Nicoletti. So where if you are a Jacksonville investor, you have started to see him pretty much everywhere. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're also going to talk about how important it is, because I know some of our listeners are from out of town. If you're investing any city all of the United States, you need someone like Al on your team, a consultant, in order to get through some of the gray areas, some of the tougher legal stuff when it comes to tax deed, probates, foreclosure. And we're going to really dig into that stuff today because we were just talking before this. Even me, who hasn't been into this industry a crazy long time, I've been in it full time about 3.5 years. There's still a lot of gray for me in these areas. So welcome, Al, to the show. Thanks for so much for coming.
Thank you so much, Pat. And it's so great to be here. And I remember the first time you just had talked about it, and I was so excited to be on the podcast for Yellowbird, and I can't wait to dive in with you.
Hell yeah. So getting started, I always like to start with just your background. Tell me where you came from, kind of growing up, high school, and how you ended up kind of where you're at now. Just give me your background.
So I grew up in Miami. For the longest time I was there, probably about 20 years. Down in Miami, I was actually into a lot of music. I played violin for about 15, 16 years, and it was just music, music, music. I wasn't really in the academic field. And eventually I was really good, and I got a scholarship to the University of Miami. And at that time, I was still all about music. I was thinking about some academics and maybe where I would go after school. And I realized music wasn't going to make money. I really love it. I really realized it made a lot of great connections with people that I still keep in touch with today, but I realized it wasn't something that was going to get me to the next level. And from there, I thought maybe I could take music and I could do something with my personality. Maybe I could, because I'm a very good people person, I love talking with people, I love explaining it, and I thought maybe I could take something like that with law and coordinate it with music. And maybe I could do an entertainment law, maybe be an entertainment lawyer. And at the time, I had no idea what an entertainment lawyer meant.
But the fact of bringing lawyer into it, that was the money piece of it?
Yes, that was the money piece. All I thought was I could talk with people, I know music, and maybe I can get on with artists and figure out how I can coordinate some kind of contracts or negotiate. I had no idea what was involved at all. All I heard were the two words. And I got involved in the music world more, and I learned more about the entertainment law side. And eventually I started doing more business law classes, and I didn't really get into the music that much at the university. And so for some reason I thought law school. I had no other area to go. There wasn't really any other academics that I could dive in, any other major. It wasn't like I was engineering or biology.
Were you still playing violin the whole time at school?
Yes.
So your scholarship was for, right?
Yes. I was still playing all the way 4 years, and eventually I applied for law school. I went to law school at Barry in Orlando, and when I got up to Orlando, I still had that mindset of, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to be an entertainment lawyer, I'm going to find all the niches, and the next thing you know, you're taking contracts, you're taking constitutional law, you're taking torts, and a whole bunch of things I've never seen before. And at that time, I had no idea really what was going on. I mean, when you dive into law school, you just are in a whole other world. It's not the university that it was. And at the time, I was surrounded by a lot of people. I didn't know a lot of people there. And I eventually made a great friend in one of my best friends now, Jesse. And at the time, I tell the story to everybody. When I met Jesse, I was in property class, and it must have been after lunch. He kicked my chair and he goes, "Wake up." I was like, "Who are you? You know, what's your deal?" And he goes, "Wake up." So then I turned around and went back, and then he kicked my chair again. And the rest is history from there. Jesse and I became best friends after that. And we just, we studied together, went to school together, we talked together. And I remember the whole time he was thinking entertainment law is not really going to be something you're going to do. And I thought, what do you mean? And he goes, it's not really an area that's going to take off. You know, it's not something that is not just feasible, but how about make money? And I thought, okay, let's see what else is out there. And this is how probate started to really slip in my world. I remember we were about to start signing up for classes in our second year, end of second year. And he said, what classes are you taking? So I told him I was taking evidence, all these other classes. And he said, contracts drafting. He said, why are you taking that? I said, I don't know, because it sounds good. I can learn about contracts. He's like, come take probate with me. Come take Florida probate class. I said, nah. He goes, okay, watch. You're gonna really dislike that class. And I wish I'd taken it with him then. But I look back now. And at the time, I had no idea what it was. And he was working for a firm in Orlando all on probate, estate planning, guardianships. So he had a huge background in the probate field. And I kind of listened, I took it in, I saw kind of what he was doing at his firm, all the projects he was doing outside at the house, we'd hang out. And we graduated from school, we all took the bar exam, and I remember we were hanging out one day, and we were just talking about, I got a job in Miami, got my first job. It was a lot of real estate litigation.
It was at a real estate law firm?
Yes.
Real estate?
Yeah, real estate law firm, probate, but a lot of foreclosure defense litigation. And I remember at the time, you know, I thought, oh, probate sounds good. You know, how do I get in? I'm going to do some probate stuff. And I remember he had come down from Orlando or Jacksonville at the time he got the job here at the law firm we're at now. And he came down, he hung out with me, and he said, have you ever thought about looking after properties maybe that are in the name of the deceased, or, you know, maybe there's properties out there that are still sitting around that are titled still in the deceased's name and therefore need probate? And at the time I was thinking, what are you talking about? You know, here's another thing. What are you talking about? And so it dawned on me that he had this interesting thought to me about maybe there's a way that we get people to find properties, or maybe there's all these properties just sitting out there that haven't been taken care of because either people don't have the money to do it, it's expensive, or anybody they've went to before tell them it's going to be a long time. So it took a little bit of time for me to marinate what he was talking about. So it took a couple months, and then it dawned on me how many properties are just sitting out there where somebody did die and the heirs either did know or didn't know and never took care of a probate situation.
Seems crazy.
It is crazy because the amount of them is absurd. I didn't know the extent of it at the time. And I think I did some research on it, and I realized it's probably, as it stands, it could be 3,000 just in Miami alone, 2,000.
Wow.
Just a lot, you know? And I realized it was an interesting way to get in, but I had to find a way in. I had to find who knows about this stuff. So at the time, while I was in Miami, I knew realtors, I knew some investors, and, you know, I kind of told them, I was like, you know what probate is, you know, you should get into probate. And every one of them said, what is probate? You know, what is that? Like, you know, what are you talking about? And of course, you know, I explain it, like, you know, I've explained to you, we sat down, and
yeah.
I remember you were just looking at me like, you know, what is this thing, you know? But I dove right in to talk about probate with them. And I don't think a lot of them grasped it at first. I think a very few did. And I met another guy, Omi, I told them all about probate. He's an investor down in Miami. And he kind of realized for me, he goes, Al, you're right. I'm finding more and more of these properties, whether it's a foreclosure where somebody died on title and they had the mortgage and they died because they didn't make the last five payments. And so they have to have a foreclosure now, or maybe that he found that situation from a family member. So at the time I was like, great, you know, this is great. And all of a sudden I was sitting around the house one day and Jesse, you know, calls me and he goes, what are you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? What am I doing? I'm, you know, just hanging around the house right now. He goes, well, we're kind of looking for a lawyer up here in Jacksonville.
You were still in Miami.
I was still in Miami at the time. And he said, we're looking for somebody. And I said, okay. He goes, what do you think? I'm like, you know, tell me more. You know, what's kind of going on?
Yeah.
And he even said at the time that if I had come up here, it would be a no-brainer for the kind of environment, the differences of Miami to Jacksonville. And I was willing to explore. I was willing to stand up and say, let's go. Let's give it a shot. Let's have at it. I'm ready to go. And
it's not easy to leave your hometown where you're comfortable and you know everybody and you know, you have a good grasp on it there. It's not easy.
It's not easy, but it made it easy knowing that it wasn't happening like it is now for me. It wasn't moving, and the understanding of what the industry is with the foreclosures and the probates or the taxis, it wasn't a bigger picture down there for some reason. But as soon as he said, you know, hey, there's this opening, I came up, I interviewed, I was in. I said, I'm coming, let's go. And the next thing you know, I brought my skills of my networking, because when I was in Miami, I was a part of all these networking groups, these small business associations, the chambers, the smaller chambers, the bar associations. So I had a not only background with real estate, but I had a networking background of going and talking with people.
Let me stop you right there. Where do you think that came? Do you think that's just natural for you to want to do that? Or is that something you had to work at? And the reason I ask is because when I first got into this, I first started learning about it, I guess, 8 or so years ago, 8, 10 years ago, I started learning about it. I'm not a super, I don't like to go out and put myself out there and talk to people when I'm trying to learn. You know, it's an ego thing, I guess. I was very uncomfortable going to networking events. In my mind, I could just read all the books in the world and just become a lone wolf and buy rentals completely by myself. Not the fucking case, but it took a lot. It took a lot of, for me to go out and start networking and be part of these groups. It wasn't easy for me to do that. And I didn't realize the importance of it in the beginning. And I'm just wondering if that was just a natural thing. You knew how important it was, or if it was just a natural thing for you.
I think it was a combination of a few things. One was playing the violin. We would have to do end of the year performances. And even back when I was young, I would do all these drama recitations, you know, for classes and stuff. I remember my mom would say, go, like, do it. And at the time I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And I think the violin performances got me to stand up, you know, my bow shaking, the violin shaking, but you know, everybody said you look cool as a cucumber, and eventually doing that. And
so getting numb to it almost.
Yeah, and getting in the middle of it and actually saying, like, you know, this is what I'm good at. This is how I'm a performer. I'm an entertainer. Like, I know how to get up there and just do it. And the other combination was my original mentor in Miami, where I first got my job, Dennis Haber. Dennis is a natural marketer on his own. He's very charismatic. You know, you see him, he looks quiet, but as soon as he stands up, it's just like, you know, this big thing's happening right now. And when he was bringing me in and mentoring me, he had said, go to these things, go to the association, just go, you know? And I didn't realize, you know, I went, you know, because I wanted to see. I wanted to make money. I wanted to market.
Right.
But what I didn't realize is pass the mic, stand up, you know, get, you know, start saying things. You know, you have to get in front of people. They have to know what you do. If you don't tell people what you do, they don't know.
Yep.
So it was really getting in front of that and getting him to see that in me as well. I mean, he realized what I could do. And as more I progressed, he had me doing more. And I was out there doing speaking, a couple speaking things at the associations. But I think just doing the things now, Now I took all of those things and doing the seminars and the speaking gigs now.
Was that completely new to your office?
Yes, it was. It was not something that was there, and it's not something that's in every office either.
No, not at all.
You know, it's just boom, just let it happen. But that was also internally for me. I realized that if you don't do, you're never going to learn.
Right.
And you have to at least throw yourself out there to tweak and do trial and error. And I knew
put yourself in uncomfortable situations.
Absolutely. They say the more uncomfortable you are, the more you're learning.
Yeah. And the more you're right in what you're doing.
Good.
It's right. So true.
So it's what happened with me. And I learned. I did. I put myself out there. I did the seminars. And I learned, you know, how people are going to ask questions, what questions they're going to ask, what situations. And by doing that, I get questions even in emails and, you know, people calling me, and it helps me learn about new scenarios that I would have never thought of or had, or new hypotheticals if I never would have done that.
Right. So doing this is expanding your knowledge in the field that you enjoy and are in full time. And it's also bringing in business.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's bringing in, and I know we had talked about it before. What I noticed was I had just come back here like August 2018, and I noticed that the biggest shift in the business coming in and the calls by about June of this year. And then I did my tax deed, tax lien course in May. So maybe that had something to do with it. People started knowing me more. And then I did my probate workshop seminar back in September. And before that, it was the trade show. So it was a combination of a punch, another punch, and then I did a couple more things that got me out there more. And that's what really started happening. And the business came after that. Checks come in, and it's gravy from there.
So like we were talking about before we went on, before we went live here, is it's a snowball effect, right? The more you do, the first few you go to, it may seem kind of like, oh, this was a waste of time, or maybe you didn't. You talked to some people but didn't really feel the ball was moved forward. But as it snowballs, you know, it's just crazy the effect that happens and how big your name gets out there. And the more people you know, Gonzalo and Dominic, I heard it from them. They said your network is your net worth.
Yes.
And it's so true in any industry. You said if people don't know what you do, I mean, if you don't tell them what you do, they're never going to know. So – yeah,
it is
absolutely huge.
Absolutely. And it has snowballed. It has snowballed. And you just have to get up and do it. You can't, you know, I think I told everybody at the last speak, I said, you know, speaking has changed my game. And it has changed what I do. It has changed my perspective, confidence, and actually knowledge. It has forced me to learn more. Because now you got to know more. If you're going to get out there and speak, you better know what you're talking about.
Right.
Or have an idea so you can just think on your feet and get the base knowledge for people. And it has snowballed for me now because I notice how many more things come in and more people want to talk with me about it. And it's so helpful when you have people like Chris Farnes.
Yeah.
Chris has been, you know, with Taya, they've been blasting me out. And I'm like, gonna go for it. I'm all in. And, you know, just doing some of the things at the investor associations and doing it with Yellowbird and the roundtable discussions.
Yeah.
I've had people come up to me and email me like a month or two later and say, hey, I saw you at the roundtable. You're kind of talking about the probate stuff. Like, what do we do? And so it's really taken off.
Awesome. So let me ask you this for investors in Jacksonville that are listening. What are the situations they could be in to where it's a good idea for them to email your office?
I would
specifically.
I would say the best situations is, and first and foremost for investors, probate. You know, I could talk to death about it. No pun intended.
Nice.
You know, and it's when you come across these situations where you are hunting the houses or you're coming across these houses by list leads, by word of mouth, whether you're a realtor, whether you're an investor, and there's a motivated seller. And let's just say they didn't even know about somebody being deceased on title, but they're ready to go. It's Pat Flynn. It's the seller. You're under contract and you pull title and you go to your local title company and they come back with the title commitment and it says that proper probate proceedings are required.
Never want to see that.
You don't, but now you got me, right? So now you're good. But you have to work that out because
right.
you can't, the underwriter, the title insurance company, is not going to write you a buyer's policy until it has been sifted out. That situation. I would say another one is when you come across the motivated seller and they tell you that somebody on title, their mom, their dad, the brother, depending on who it is, had died, you know, owning the house. And the first thing that should come to your mind is, okay, well, let's see what we got to do here. Do we have to do a probate? Maybe the deed showed, you know, I always say sometimes you don't need probate depending on how the deed is, if it's in a trust. But generally, if it's still in that name of the person that died, you need to get the probate done for title to transfer. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole concept that, you know, a lot of people don't know, why do we need this? And we need it because of title insurance and to rightfully transfer title. And so when you come across those, it is a huge thing. I would also say the tax deeds. There's a lot of investors out there that, and actually with this, probate goes hand in hand. Because I always say, I've been thinking about this more. The more we get older in Florida, the more probates that we're going to see. But I think at the same time, we're going to see a lot more tax deeds. And I think the reason being is because I generally say the reason somebody stopped paying their taxes, they forgot, they can't, or they're dead. And if they're dead and the family doesn't really know that they've been deceased, or they do know, they just never taken care of it. If they let it go to a tax certificate sale, 2 years, they apply, there's a tax deed. So tax deeds are a huge avenue for investors for making sure their numbers work. And when you buy a tax deed, it wipes off generally most of the liens on the property. You want to make sure bankruptcies and IRS stuff that's not on the title commitments.
What are some things you do have that are red flags if an investor in Jacksonville is bidding on the tax deed auction? Yeah, it's if it goes to auction, most of that stuff is cleared out. But what is some stuff that can come back and bite you if someone were to bid and win at a tax deed auction?
I would say first and foremost, it's making sure the municipal lien numbers work for you, because the tax deed and the quiet title cannot wipe out the municipal liens, the demolition liens, and the nuisance liens. So making sure you have a plan in place that if you can reduce it and make an agreement with the city, that your numbers are going to fit and work. Making sure that the property's not in a tax deed, bankruptcy situation, and making sure that it's not going to be overly complicated with either outstanding liens for the municipal stuff. There really is no downside to the tax deed, because if you buy the tax deed, heirs don't have a right to come back. But if you buy the tax deed and the owner, let's just say, tries to make this claim that they weren't served, they weren't noticed, you have a remedy. And the remedy is you can use the statute to say, I can go back and get a judgment with the court. I can go back to the clerk, and the clerk will give me my money back at 12% interest. So it's almost like a federal deposit, you know, ensuring that you're going to make sure you get your money back either way. But from your perspective, it's a unique way to buy property at a lot lower level, as long as the numbers work,
right?
Because the mortgages are coming off, the judgments are coming off, the liens are coming off.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about numbers work. So I'm bidding on the tax deed auction, and I buy a house for let's do it this way. I buy a house at the tax deed auction, say $20,000. What are my next steps? And if I want to get clear title and say, keep it as a rental or sell it, doesn't matter. I just want to buy it and I want to own it. I want to own it legally with clear title. What are my next steps after buying it?
And I think this is great, because we kind of even talked about this. And with a tax deed, it depends what you want to do. If you want to hold it and you want to keep it, you have a couple options. One of the statutes says if you want to be in there for a year and you pay the taxes, you live in it, after a year, the tax deed could be marketable.
You live in it?
If you live in it.
Yourself.
If you live in it, reside in it, and you do the things that show that you're in there, there's a statute that could be invoked to say, I can get marketable and insurable title after a year. Or if you don't plan to live there, you could hold the tax deed for 4 years. And after 4 years, the title insurance underwriters generally view that as, okay, we don't need to do a quiet title lawsuit.
So you buy it on auction, rent it out, do a little renovation, rent it out, but keep what do you get when you just get the tax?
You just get the tax deed. Yep.
You get the tax deed and you just keep it as a tax deed, rent it out for 4 years, and then?
And after 4 years, if you ever wanted to sell it, and then you pull title, the title commitment that's going to come back should not say that it's going to require a quiet title.
Do we need you to make that change, or is that automatic?
It's an automatic thing.
Interesting.
It's actually at least 4 years. You could hold it for 4 years, and then after 4 years, once you bring it to the title underwriter, it should come back and say there's no need for a quiet title. The downside, though, to all of that, in my mind, is in the event there was one guy that said he wasn't noticed, or there were heirs, or what, heirs don't have a right to say anything if they weren't on title and the county did not have a duty to notify them. But let's just say there was that one guy that was alive and he would come back, let's say 2-3 years later. By doing a quiet title lawsuit, you are now taking the steps procedurally to make sure that, look, we notified him. We served him.
Right.
He didn't say anything. He didn't come back. Now I have a judge's order saying that title is in the name of Pat Flynn, LLC. That's it, bottom line. And that's the upside to taking care of it. A lot of people choose to hold them for 4 years because 98% of them, nothing ever happens, 99%.
Right.
But that one thing that does happen, but again, you do have your remedy at the end if you ever wanted to get it back because there was that one person that did.
Okay, interesting. So say I do want a quiet title right after I win it. Is it as simple as emailing your office with an address saying, hey guys, I just won this, can we start the process?
Yeah, absolutely. If you email me, you can call me, and I'll go walk you through the first steps. And let's say you did come to me, I bought the tax deed, you want to do the quiet title process. One of the things I always make sure is what are going to be the fees and the costs for getting it done. And we've walked through this. And mm-hmm. I always say there's my fees is what I get paid for
yep.
to do everything. And it's a flat rate, uncontested. And there's costs. And cost, I define those as things that are out of my control that are going to be required to get the quiet title done. And it depends on how expensive that ends up being, depending on if the person's alive, if the person's dead, and how many liens there are. And I think the greatest resource that was brought to my attention through Carolyn Morales, she's big on tax certificates, and she'll talk about it forever. And she's great. And she brought up the Tax Deed Public Viewer. It is a resource by the county where you can look up the parcel numbers or the tax deed numbers. There's a reference way to look it up, and you could pull it up. You could see what did the county notify, who did they notify, what lien holders there are. And I remember when we had talked, and you're probably thinking, how did you pull that title search so fast? You know, the Tax Deed Public Viewer, because the county has to do a title search to notify the right people. And that helps me because then I could say, Pat, this is what I see for costs. We see a mortgage holder, a lien holder, a few other people here, and we have to serve. And if we can't serve, you have to add up the costs if everything's perfect. At best case, we serve all of them, they get service, and we have a number, let's just say, you know, opening the court.
By serving them, it's just notifying them, right? They don't have a chance to...
Correct.
They can't come back and do anything.
What they could do is try to say something.
Say that the city didn't notify them correctly when it went to auction in the first place?
They could try.
Okay.
But then you also have in the Tax Deed Public Viewer all the steps that the county took with certified mail.
Yeah.
So you can't really say it wasn't delivered if it actually shows that it was delivered. And, you know, you get me.
Then it's up to a judge at that point.
Exactly. Right? And at that point, I mean, the county only has so much they have to do.
Yeah.
And at least, you know, there are remedies for it back. But I think it's finding out what the best case and the worst case numbers are. Because in the state of Florida, if you want to do a quiet title, regardless if it's a tax deed or regardless of if it's a regular quiet title, because Pat LLC comes to me and says, I took title to this property through a quitclaim. A little bit trickier when it comes to quiet title on that end. But anytime you do a quiet title and open a court file, it depends on cost, depends on property value. Because if it's under $50,000, it's $450 to start it. If it's the property value is $50,000 to $250,000, it's about $950 to start it. And if it's over $250,000, it's just alone $1,900 just to start a quiet title. But that's when you're buying the higher end property,
right.
And it probably is worth it for you because you can flip it for a lot more or do whatever you want. But it helps giving people the worst and the best.
Awesome. Great info there. I mean, it clears it up a lot for me too. What I'd like to do real quick is kind of flip the script on tax deed, because we also have people that listen to this that may be in that financial difficulty situation, or they're in a situation where they need to sell and they're not sure what to do. So can you put yourself in the shoes of someone that just that hasn't paid their taxes, and what's going to happen to you? What's the process going to be if you don't pay your taxes on your house? How long do you have, and what are your options in order to get out of that and so your property doesn't go to auction?
Well, one of the things is that you should pay your taxes by November.
That's right? The best answer.
Right? If you pay your taxes, you stay. You don't, you go. But what happens with taxes, so let's say I didn't pay taxes because I'm alive, right? And I just choose not to pay. The county notifies me. I say I can't pay because I don't have a job, or I don't have the money, or whatever it is.
This is year one that you don't pay.
Right. This is the one that you don't pay. Or homestead or non-homestead, there's a difference as far as certificates are paid.
Okay.
But if you don't pay, okay, so the county then notifies you again in March. They notify you again in April. And eventually when you fail to pay your taxes, you're notified that it's about to go on a list in the county for people like Pat to start bidding on for the certificate. It's not the deed yet. This is all statutory.
Very important difference there.
Yes, it's a lien. It's not a deed. It's not a title. But they notify you and say, last chance, you're going to, you know, get ready. It's going to go to a tax lien certificate sale. And then I still don't pay. And I'm like, I can't do it. And then the next thing is that here's Pat. He's bidding on this property, on the certificates. The amount of the taxes are to maybe get some interest. Maybe I'm in Jack's Beach and you're bidding against people. You're probably going to get a 5% interest because everybody's bidding. But if you're out in 32221, nobody's really out there. So you can maybe get your 18%. So it depends, you know.
Can it go that high?
It can go that
high.
Yes, it can. And it depends where you're aiming to go.
Right.
And so let's just say you find my property, you bid on it. You can hold that certificate lien on the property, on my taxes, until I either pay it off, or after 2 years, you can then start what's called the tax deed application process. So in my perspective, I'm looking at it like, whew, I don't have to do anything. I get 2 years, nobody's going to do anything, and I get 2 years to think about it. You get a lot longer with that than a foreclosure in Duval County. So after 2 years, let's say I still don't, or maybe an investor approaches me a year later and they want to make sure they can buy the property. Well, they got to pay off the tax that you have with interest. So they're not just paying off what you paid, but they're paying it off with the accrued interest over time. As long as they pay it off and they get the house sold, then it's a done deal. But what happens is after 2 years, you apply for this tax deed application. They notify me again and say, you know, hey, Al, your property's about to start being applied for a tax deed. It could go to sale maybe 90 days from now. I'm just putting you on notice. So after that, and I still don't respond, and the county does their publication in the newspaper, after that step is when the county then notifies, tells me your property is going for tax deed sale on December 31st, 2019. And I'm going, okay, and I still can't do anything. And I'm hoping for a Kyle or a Pat to come along and say, hey, I'll offer you this. We'll make sure your taxes are paid off. We'll make sure the tax certificate lien holder's paid off. Put some money in your pocket and get it done. And as long as you get it done before the tax deed sale happens, the transaction can happen. There's no real authority to cancel a tax deed sale without the taxes being paid.
Got it. So basically, your only option, if your house is going to tax deed sale, if you haven't paid your taxes in 3 years, it's going to sale, and the person that bought your cert 3 years ago filed for the tax deed, your only options are pay those taxes, or the house is going to sell, right? That's it. You can't file for bankruptcy. You can't hire a lawyer and get it pushed back. You can try,
and with bankruptcy is a whole other niche that I don't get into and do, because it requires so much understanding about the finances and whether you can be admitted for a bankruptcy liquidation case.
Okay.
There's so many things that
different animal,
different color. But actually, it would happen sooner than three. It would actually just be two. You get the 2 years, and you have to act fast, because you can't cancel it. You pay, you stay. You don't, you go. And there's no authority to truly cancel that. And they can make the claim that, look, I was never noticed, I was never this.
Right.
But you're going to have to start proving those defenses that you weren't noticed. And now what do you have? You have the taxi public viewer with the county that's notified everybody. So there's a whole cross-reference section with tax deeds. It's pretty cool.
That is interesting. I'll plug us real quick too. One unique thing we do for people is, if they're in that situation, it's going to auction next month. We'll pay their taxes, buy the house from them, and give them, 3-6 months to get back on their feet. Of course, we're buying it at a number that's good for us. I'm not acting like we're a nonprofit that's saving people from the auction. Right. We're buying it at a good number too, but it really is a win-win. That they're not getting evicted from their house. They're taking their time moving. The taxes need to be paid anyway. A lot of times they'll be able to get some proceeds from the house too. So there are a lot of win-win situations. There's people you can reach out to if tax deed auction is happening in your house.
And this is where I get back to probate and tax deeds, because what you could end up finding is you get the list of people that have a pending tax deed sale, and you go to you do your mailers, you do your door knock, you get there, and you find out the person died, and you find one of the heirs or two of the heirs, and you get both of them. It's possible to get a probate done to get the property sold before that tax deed sale. You just have to have the right things, the right numbers, because you want to make sure you have enough time to get it done if it's complicated.
And cooperating heirs.
Yeah, you don't want it to be a Thursday, the tax deed is on a Monday, and you find out you need to do three probates. That's not happening. straight up, I'm going to tell you when to run for the hills too, Pat.
Right.
But with tax deeds, they go hand in hand, because you can help the motivated sellers and heirs get the money, because it could go to a public auction. And at public auction, it could surpass the amount of the taxes, title search and stuff, and they can get a surplus. But you also have a great argument to say, if you take the deal now, we can get you more money than you probably would at a public auction. So it's understanding the motivation for them before it hits that tax deed sale.
That's a great segue into probate too. I want to put yourself in the shoes of the person that's in the situation again. So another thing we talked about beforehand, and a question that we get asked all the time, is, okay, we have a person that lives in Arizona, a parent or a sibling just passed away, and they own property in Jacksonville, titled in the deceased person's name. And it's in rough shape, so it needs a lot of work. Or not in rough shape, whatever. What is that person who lives in Arizona, the next of kin, what is their next step in order to sell the property legally?
So one of the steps, and I have this one, as we were talking about, is in Washington. And he had reached out to say, his wife had passed away in the state of Washington, and she owned property here still in her name. And one of the things I think is really important, whether it's the property's in shambles or whether it's a good property, is running a title commitment. Because while it could be clear that you need to do the probate for that person, you never know what's in the back chain of title. And I think you and I have been in those situations where, hey, it looks like you got to do this probate, and then you find out we never had to do it. And there's plenty of times you'll find out, hey, it doesn't look like we need to do a probate here, and you get the title commitment and it says you have to do it. So I always tell them, one of the first things we want to make sure, if you want to sell, is making sure there's no other issues on title that we need to take care of before that probate. Because if I tell you, hey, Pat, yeah, all we got to do is this probate, and then we run title again only to find out, no, it was John Smith back in the chain that we also have to do. You're going to be so appreciative when I said, let's do it now, right, then later.
So step one is find a probate attorney in that city.
Sure. Right?
A probate or a state attorney.
Sure.
And then have them run that search.
I never think of that first step because I always think they're coming to me. So
it's a good way to think.
You know, I'm like, okay, you're coming to me. Let's get this done. Yes, find the probate lawyer that's going to be able to solve the problem for you. And I'll get into how we operate that makes me a lucrative way to use
it. Yeah.
And I say, you find the lawyer, you get the title commitment, and then it's asking the questions. Who is the person that was on title? So if it was your spouse, let's just say, you know, you want to know at the time, was this their homestead property? That's a big thing too, because if it's homestead property, you have one, it could go faster, especially in Duval County or in Florida. Homestead property alone could go faster because if you get the heirs, you get all of them.
Yep.
Titles transferred to all of them. But there are other issues if you find out the spouse owned that one property and they were married at the time. Did they have children? Because in Florida, the way that the statute goes, if you don't take care of it within 6 months, the surviving spouse gets a life estate and then the other two kids get remainderment interest. So when you're going out, who do we have to get on contract? I'm going to tell you, Pat, you need the surviving spouse and the two kids for homestead. Yep. In those situations. So asking the big picture is really key for me and knowing who is there in the family and who is the person actually reaching out to, because they may be a brother, a sister, a grandchild that really is not going to be in the line to get the property. So finding out who they are. And then I would tell them this. I'm like, look, when do you expect to close? You have a contract ready with an investor. And the way I structure it is I could tell them, if you want to get this done, get under contract with the investor and we can then run the probate to make sure title gets transferred to you. If it's an out-of-state property, it's going to be technically, and they live in out-of-state and this is the only property here, it'd be non-homestead. So yeah, I'm starting to think, okay, maybe this is going to be a little bit more in cost, maybe a little bit more of, we have to appoint what's called the personal representative to make sure title's transferred out. But you want to find out where that person lived, where, you know, how many other properties there are, and just getting the bigger picture to this stuff. I had another one recently where it was the brother that was trying to sell the house, and we found out his sister was also on title, and they never took care of her interest, so we needed to probate it. And at the time, I said, you know, who are the people? Who are the heirs? You know, surviving spouse. He said, yes, there is. And it's the husband. And I said, well, was this her homestead? You know, did she live there? Did she reside there? And they said, no, she didn't. So now we're looking at a little bit of a different picture of the pieces we have to move to make sure, in my world of probate, to make sure we get title over, get a motion to approve the sale, find all the numbers that work. So in the world of probate, you have to find out who's who and what's what. The death certificate's really important to know where the person – in Florida, you need to know where they resided. Mm-hmm. to do the probate. And you may find property here where somebody died and they own property in Georgia. And, you know, or they lived in Georgia and they have property here and we have to do what's called an ancillary probate. So you need to know where they lived, where they if they resided there to get a picture of it.
So what I'm getting from you is that it's very, very situational.
It is, yeah.
So, and I'm gonna stop me if I'm wrong with anything I'm about to say. I'm gonna try to simplify it a little bit. If you live in Arizona or any other state, or even in Jacksonville, and you have a property in Jacksonville, someone has passed away and it's titled in their name, you have a couple different options. It needs to be probated either way. So step one is contact a probate attorney. If you're in Jacksonville, contact Al, who's going to do it.
Or Florida.
or the state of Florida.
You got it.
Step two is, and what I say whenever I talk to someone that's in one of these situations on the phone, is there's not a right way to sell the house. If the house is in shambles, maybe you want to get the probate done, get through it the right way, fix it up yourself, and then sell it for top dollar. That's one option. Another option is go through Al, contact someone like me, get an investor number. And that way me and Al can work together and we can make sure everything gets done right way and it gets closed as soon as the probate's done. That's the fastest, quickest, and easiest option. And another option is get through the probate and just put it on the MLS, the standard route. So there's a lot of different paths you can go. None of them's right, but either way, the probate has to be done.
Yes.
So you have to contact a probate attorney that you trust. Make sure you pull title on the house. Go through all the surviving heirs. Make sure you've got all your loose ends tied up. And then you can make your decision on what you're going to do with the disposition of the house.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is. And you're spot on with the fact that you need to find everybody. And the way we are structured is if you can get under contract and we know we can do the probate on our end, you get under contract and we're willing to wait for anything at closing. You know, we can deal with as long as we get the upfront costs to do the probate, which could be.
Describe that a little better, because that's a really unique thing about you guys, what you do. If someone out of state comes to you and says, I need to get this probate done, what's different about you than some other folks in Jacksonville?
And I would say it's get under contract first and foremost. Find out who
to sell.
Find out who are the heirs, get them all on contract. And they can ask me, like, what are we looking at? Who do you need to get on the contract for the seller end? And then we have the buyer's end. Once we have that, then we're looking at, here's what we can do. Our fees for doing the work, we can wait until the closing. That means that they never have to pay that money up front to us, or we bill them. This is something that just comes out and we are willing to wait for it. And the only thing we need are the costs up front to start the probate. Just like quiet title with the taxis, just like there's the, in order to open the court file, there's kind of like a tier system to open the file in Duval in Florida. There is for probate. So if it's just the homestead, it's just one property, it's $250. If you have a little bit more, maybe in a bank account, it's $350. But if you have one property that's non-homestead or multiple properties, you're looking at more of what's called the formal administration, the $450 property probate. But it's understanding that this is the way to not have to pay us up front for everything that we're doing. All the proceeds come out of the sale of the house. And so you get your money, everybody gets their money, and they're out. And it's just something that, you know, we're doing and I'm doing, and, you know, it works.
Yeah, that's great.
I've noticed it snowball. I've noticed people are more motivated when they know they don't have to pay for anything and they're going to make all the money.
Absolutely.
And you can do it in a fast amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow that's a great concept for everybody.
Absolutely. One more thing I wanted to hit on before we finished up, and I know I mentioned bankruptcy and it's kind of a different animal, but you mentioned that down in South Florida, you were in foreclosure defense. So a lot of people that contact us or reached out to us are in foreclosure situations. So can you just speak to being a foreclosure in a foreclosure defense office? Someone that just got a Liz Penance letter from a bank that the foreclosure process is starting, what are a few options that they have in order, if say they want to stay in their house, they want to get rid of the foreclosure, what if they don't have the money? Obviously the best thing to do is pay your mortgage, right?
Right.
So they don't have that money, but they want to stay in their house. If they can, they don't want their credit completely destroyed. What are some options that they have?
And the credit being destroyed depends on, are they on the note?
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, if it was their mom or dad that, let's say, died on the property, they were on the mortgage and the note.
Right.
And they're just living in the property. You know, a lot of people think, oh, bankruptcy, oh, you know, my credit. You're not the obligor. You're not on contract with these people.
Let's say non-probate, non-tax deed, your house that you live in, your homestead, you get served a Liz Penance. What are your options to stay there?
One of them would be you could do a loan, a refinance with the property. So you can come find me, retain me.
Should you find an attorney right away as soon as you get served a Liz Penance?
If you want to keep the property or you want to structure it differently with the bank, yes.
Okay.
Especially in Duval County. Duval County still goes pretty quickly with the dockets. By the time they file, I had one last year, they filed the Liz Pendens back in September of 2019, and they were ready for foreclosure, final judgment by early March.
Wow.
And that's very fast.
That's really
fast. And, you know, I was thinking about it last night because I did do the – I was – Dennis was really helping me with the foreclosure stuff.
Yeah.
And we would take depositions of the corporate reps. Very unusual to do that, especially Duval. But it was an unusual step because that was when we started poking holes. That's when, okay, they didn't pay. That's one thing. But now we're poking holes at the steps and the chain of paper trail.
Right.
You know, and that's when it gets interesting and you start listening to all the conspiracy theorists with the foreclosure stuff and you're like, you know, US Bank is not doing what they're supposed
right.
to, or the certificates are a false thing. And I realize, I'm like, you know, maybe there's a different strategy to stop it. And Miami, it could take, you know, years. I know Dennis still had a file that was still going on for 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know what's
going on. That's a good attorney.
He's been holding it off. You know? But as soon as you get a Liz Pendens, I think one of the first things is you need to evaluate, what do I want to do with the property? Do
right.
I want to sell? Is there equity in the property?
Mm-hmm.
If there's equity in the property and you can't make a payment, why not just get out while you can, you know, delay the foreclosure?
Great advice right there.
Yeah. Just, you know, you get out. I mean, yeah, you know, really. I mean, and then you can get your money. So that is one step. If you do want to keep it, I think you have to start thinking about whether you can make those payments. And an interesting avenue I've been figuring out is, will there be like a third party lender you can go apply to that may not drag the process on of loan modification? Because let's say you had Wells Fargo and you didn't pay and you want to structure and refinance with your Wells Fargo loan. Well, as far as my understanding goes, Wells Fargo doesn't have an incentive to really move the file because they're not making fees from the file. So one of the things you could do is you can go to a third party like TD Bank and maybe say, hey, you know, can you pay off this Wells Fargo thing? I'll do a loan structuring finance with you and maybe I can have lower payments for however long.
It's complicated for the average person. Should they still, in that situation, should they reach out to a foreclosure defense attorney to have those talks for them?
If they wish to do that,
yeah.
And the only problem and downside with doing it is if they had the money to pay the lawyer to actually do the process, because we've seen far too often that they want to do it, but they haven't paid their mortgage. So are they going to pay the lawyer?
Unlikely.
Right. You know, and that's where we say, look, if there's equity in this, you know, we're willing to help with the foreclosure defense and you don't have to put anything down because the court file's already been open. So we'll say, hey, we'll help you with the foreclosure defense and we'll pull anything we do, our fees, out of the closing. So it helps the homeowner. It helps the situation.
Absolutely.
It helps them save money too. And there have been situations where it's about to go to a sale and maybe they get an offer from an investor and they're thinking, well, it's going to sale. What do we do? Can we cancel the sale, reschedule the sale? And if you do have a contract, you can go to the judge, say, look, if this goes forward, this is the situation. They're going to make money off this deal. And by it being not canceled, you're putting them in a position for a public auction where they could lose the money or there's going to be minimal surplus. But it happens all the time. It's foreclosure is, I mean, we went through the rough patch in 2008 and 2010. I really jumped in 2015, so I didn't really get to see the real downfall on the short sales. And we are certainly not in a short sale situation right now. So you want to talk about the best time to get out and forget the refinance, unless you truly want to keep the house and can pay, this is the time to do it.
Great. That's great advice, and I've never heard it put that way exactly, to where if you get served a Liz Pendens and there's equity in the house, you have options. Your options are hiring a foreclosure defense attorney if you want to keep the house. Your options are selling the house for sale by owner or with an agent, or selling to an investor who's going to, of course, pay you a little less, but can get it done like that and can get you some of your equity out. They're going to take some of it. Any route you go, they're going to take some of the equity for the services they're providing you, but you have options. You mentioned short sale. The last situation I want to bring up is you're either right at, there's no equity in it. The house is worth 200. They're foreclosing on you at 192. You're going to lose money either way. And you want to keep your house. Is your only real option the bankruptcy attorney route, or
you have
anything else? Like for foreclosure, if you don't have the money to pay a foreclosure defense attorney and there's no equity in the house, it'd be pretty difficult to hire one of those, I would think.
If it's truly underwater and you're talking about underwater $20,000, $30,000,
yeah, sure.
You're starting to look at the bankruptcy attorney,
yep.
If you're really concerned about that. And there are plenty of people that are. But when you're talking about on the fence, you're talking about $1,000, $2,000. At the end of the day, if it did go to a public auction sale, there's two ways it can go. Either it goes above the payoff and you get a surplus and you can go after the surplus with the court, or it goes below and doesn't sell for enough of the payoff, and now the bank has a possible deficiency action against you. But bankruptcy is such a loaded term because I don't do bankruptcy law.
Yeah.
You could have a lot of assets, and that bankruptcy could trigger a lot of other issues with contracts, a lot of issues with your accounts and stuff. So you need to make sure if that $1,000 difference is going to, and filing for bankruptcy is going to be a big thing.
Got it.
And I couldn't say it anymore. When you get these foreclosures, it's the foreclosures that are also going to increase. So tax deed, probate, and foreclosure. The more people that are dying, the more foreclosures too, because yep. They all have property. And so you're looking at the heir saying, look, you can keep this. You can do your loan modification, kick it into loss mitigation to maybe keep it yourself. But at a time when the price, the home values are at an all-time high, why not try to tap that equity now and reinvest it in something else?
Absolutely. Great advice. Thank you so much for your time today, Al. We hit on so much. We hit on investor perspective stuff, and most importantly to us and you anyway, is the perspective of actual homeowners in these situations. So I'm glad we were able to hit on those.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. You know, I love Yellowbird. Awesome. I love being here. And it's just great to connect on things that I don't do from your perspective and I see mm-hmm. from my perspective, and it just makes it such a great situation for everybody. And if you're somebody that is investing and going after these properties and you need this kind of help with the probates and the tax deeds, I'm available to help.
Yeah. How, we'll put it in the notes, but just say it too, how people should reach out to you if they have tax deed stuff, probate stuff, really anything. And you have that title company right next door, so you can pull title just like that too. So
yes, and we know other title companies too that have different underwriters, because each underwriter could have a different requirement sometimes. It depending on what they what they're looking at, what willing to insure. But if you are looking to find me, I'm at 904-246-9994, and you can always reach me on my email at anicoletti, A-N-I-C-O-L-E-T-T-I at BAPBlaw.com.
And their office is right at the beach in A1A, which is where I live, which is an awesome place for an office.
It is.
We're trying to get over there in 2020.
Oh, good. So, hey, come on over. You know?
Keep an eye peeled at the beach. Says anything commercial stuff coming available east of A1A, like around where you guys are.
Yeah, that's a great spot. I mean, they're building the Whole Foods over there.
I know. So. Yeah, can't beat that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And reach out if you have any more questions or want to dig into this a little more. And we'll, you know, we see Al all the time, so we'll do some other little segment where we can answer that. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.